From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up,
you all had created this web and culture of corruption and cover-up and obstruction, and you thought that you could do it. You thought you would be able to get by with it, but you got caught.
That was Tennessee Senator Marsha Blackburn today grilling former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe as he appeared before the Senate Judiciary Committee, which is looking into the improper actions by the FBI during the Crossfire Hurricane investigation of President-elect Trump and his campaign. Senator Blackburn joins us in just a moment. And by the way, just about 2 hours ago, Democrat Cal Cunningham conceded the North Carolina Senate race to incumbent Tom Tillis. Now, all eyes move to Georgia, where the outcome of those two runoff elections on January the 5th could very well determine the control of the Senate. 2 + 2 = 4, unless we're talking about counting the votes in presidential elections. Election numbers coming out of Michigan, Pennsylvania, and other states are revealing. But what do they reveal? We'll talk about it with Dr. William Briggs, former professor at Cornell and statistician for big tech. He says, doesn't add up. And if, that's a big if, there is a Biden administration, what will be at the top of their to-do list? Travis Weber, Senior Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs here at FRC, joins us with the proposed executive orders the Harris and Biden administration are reportedly proposing. Also, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the Trump administration is not finished yet with getting tough on the Chinese Communist Party. What does that mean? We'll ask him. He also said today there would be a smooth transition to a second Trump administration. He's here later. We'll talk with him about it. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Parler, it's at T. Perkins. And by the way, happy birthday to all my fellow Marines, 245 years young, Semper Fi. All right. Following confirmed coronavirus cases of Senate Judiciary Committee members Tom Tillis and Mike Lee last month, the committee postponed a hearing with former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe. That took place today. It was rescheduled. The focus of the hearing was FBI's Crossfire Hurricane operation, which gave rise to the whole Russian collusion allegation that the media and Democrats pounded day after day to try and derail the Trump administration. So what did today reveal?
Christopher Steele was on the payroll of Fusion GPS, who was on the payroll of the Democratic Party. Christopher Steele was working for the Democratic Party. He provided a dossier that used a Russian source who was suspected of being a Russian agent years before, and it turned out to be a bunch of garbage. So the reason the FBI should have looked at what the CIA had told them is it begins to make Crossfire Hurricane make more sense, that this whole thing was cooked up in July, that the whole idea of Trump-Russia connections were not real. They were manufactured in part by Christopher Steele, and the FBI bought it hook, line, and sinker.
That was Chairman Lindsey Graham summarizing today's hearing. Joining me now with more is U.S. Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee, who serves as a member of the Judiciary Committee. Senator, welcome back to the program.
I'm delighted to be with you. Thank you so much.
Well, I watched the hearing today, and let me tell you what, you were pretty tough on McCabe as the other Republicans trying to get to the truth of this matter. Let me ask you this. What new information was uncovered today?
One of the things that came forward today, Tony, is that they had developed this culture that seemed to say it is okay to use our strength against our political opponents, not our nation's enemies, not those that are going to try to destroy the republic, but against our fellow citizens because we don't like them. So you have Comey, Rosenstein, Yates, and McCabe who say they knew nothing about a plot against the president, but if they knew then what they know now, they would never have signed those FISA warrants against Carter Page. And, oh, by the way, we really didn't know Christopher Steele, which Christopher Steele had been in their universe for over two decades. They knew who they were dealing with. And they also knew in January that the Russia collusion was false. We know the previous July, July 16, it was cooked up by Hillary Clinton. And then you had Comey and Strzok and Page and McCabe and Bruce and Nellie Orr that were all involved in this. Let's go get him. We need an insurance policy. We can't let this guy ever be president. And to me, to hear someone who has been so flogged in the IG report sit there and say, well, I think the inspector general got it wrong. Well, the inspector general has no political agenda. And he called this guy out and caught him lying to under oath and leaking to the media. And yet he says, well, I did these things, but I think the IG got it wrong. So this is a deeply flawed testimony that we heard today. And quite frankly, I was just happy that we could get it on the books. He doesn't think he did anything wrong. He doesn't think he committed a crime, even right. though he was part of a plot to take down the president.
My only concern is I wish it would have happened 6 months ago, a year ago, that we could yes. have gotten to this information. Right. Let me put some context here in the quote, the clip I played from Lindsey Graham. He mentioned the CIA. There was recently released a heavily redacted document that showed that the CIA went to the FBI, showing that they thought that Hillary Clinton was behind this whole thing. They were dismissive of that, rather taking a foreign official's word about a conversation that took place in a bar over our own CIA. So, I mean, this only adds fuel to the notion that there is corruption within the FBI.
Well, you're right about that. See, what they did, they had a plot, and then they needed to put the pieces in the puzzle to get to the outcome that they had prescribed would be the appropriate outcome for this plot. So this is where we are in this. They had their plot. They had their activity. They had to blame someone. So if you have a foreign official who says, well, I talked to this guy and we could pick out this one little phrase that he said and not say the rest, not use the rest, but try to pin it on him.
Right.
And this is what they did with George Papadopoulos.
Right. Right.
This is what they did with Carter Page.
So, all right, we're now this. All these facts are coming out. As you said, they thought they were going to be able to get away with it. They got caught. Okay, so how have we addressed this within the FBI and the Department of Justice? Can the American people, are we at a point yet that we can have confidence in the FBI?
As you know, what we do is to conduct the oversight, and then we turn our information over to Bill Barr there at the DOJ. I fully think that you will see Bill Barr take some action. And bear in mind, and your listeners should bear in mind, we are yet to get the Durham report, and we certainly expect to get that at some point very soon.
Yeah. Well, again, my only concern here is that this should have come months ago so that the American people would have had a full picture.
I'm in complete agreement with you. Yeah.
Let me jump ahead, because part of this is that the clock could very well be ticking on the ability to clean all of this up if there is a transition to a new administration. I want to play a clip from Senator McConnell on the floor yesterday talking about what is transpiring with these legal challenges, and I want to get your thoughts on it.
And then there's the presidential race. Obviously, no states have yet certified their election results. We have at least one or two states that are already on track for a recount. And I believe the president may have legal challenges underway in at least five states. The core principle here is not complicated. In the United States of America, all legal ballots must be counted. Any illegal ballots must not be counted. The process should be transparent or observable by all sides, and the courts are here to work through concerns. Our institutions are actually built for this. We have the system in place to consider concerns, and President Trump is 100% within his rights to look into allegations of irregularities and weigh his legal options.
Senator Blackburn, do you see Republicans kind of locking ranks and saying, yes, we should get to the bottom of this election if there are fraudulent, if there is fraudulent activity behind these irregularities, we should know about it?
Republicans do think we should know about the fraudulent activity that is there as alleged, or if there was a disenfranchisement. Now is the time to be cleaning this up and holding local and state officials to account for problems that may have existed in their software that they are contracted to use, or in the manner in which ballots were mailed out. You know, Tony, it is amazing to me. Some of these states mailed the ballots out like it was a publisher's clearinghouse sweepstakes. Every mailbox got one, whether they wanted it or not. And this is what has led to some communities voting 90% of their population. How did that happen? Because you have people that no longer live there, were dead or deceased, or people that no longer voted who got one, and we don't know what they did. Did they give it away? Did they sell it? Did people that were living in that apartment or that house fill it out and send it back in? I know people that got 3 and 4 in their mailbox of people that had previously lived at those residences. This shows you how flawed those voter rolls in some states and some counties and communities are. They need to be cleaned up so
you know,
that it truly is one person, one vote.
The president warned about this. The president's been warning about this. He said this would happen. And you know, a lot of Republicans agreed that it would because of the, as you pointed out, the voter rolls have not been cleaned up. In fact, some states have prohibited them from being blocked cleaning them up. Do you think there's enough to suggest that there may have been some blue state Democratic leaders that were pushing this for that very reason?
I think what we need to do is let the president's team and the recounts move forward. And then let's figure out as we go through this process if there was a coordinated effort afoot, because it seemed like the counting came to a halt at almost the same time in these contested states.
Right.
And they shut down for the night. That is highly unusual. I served on my county's local election commission. Once you opened a box, you did not leave that box until the box had been counted and verified. And then let's see if there was coordination on how to mail out these ballots to everybody on the voter roll, whether they requested a ballot or not. People that went to vote found out they had already voted but we're totally unaware, need to say we were disenfranchised.
Yeah, it clearly, it's to the benefit of everyone that this is completely litigated, and we know for certain we have a system we can trust. Senator Blackburn, thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, folks, stick around because we're going to see if the numbers add up next.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Hannah.
What's going on? Why so gloomy?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I had a lot planned to do during the stay-at-home time, and I just didn't do it.
Oh yeah? What did you have planned that you didn't get to do?
Well, I was actually hoping I would finally be able to get time to do a regular Bible reading routine, and I started a couple of times. I just didn't stick with it.
Don't be too down on yourself. Starting a new routine can be hard, but one way to help is to join in with others and to have a good game plan. I think I have a good solution for you.
Oh yeah?
Tony Perkins and FRC are doing a 2-year study in the Word. They have it all mapped out.
When did they start? I would be so far behind.
Oh, that's not a problem. You can literally jump in anytime. There's a daily reading, just a couple of chapters a day, with questions to help you think about what you're reading.
Nice. Where can I find this?
Go to frc.org/Bible, and you can get started.
Where's that again?
frc.org/Bible.
Got it. Checking it out now.
In a recent poll,
it was revealed that only 6% of Americans hold a biblical worldview. This research also indicated that Christianity's teachings on abortion, marriage, and homosexuality are not only misunderstood, but seen as dangerous and subversive. In response to this trend, Family Research Council has released a new set of resources in our Biblical Worldview series. In addition to our full publications, which cover the topics of Christian political engagement, abortion, religious liberty, and human sexuality, FRC now offers helpful summaries of each publication in this series, as well as accompanying prayer guides to help you and your family pray through these important issues. And finally, our popular Biblical Principles for Political Engagement is now available in Spanish. All these resources are free and available at frc.org/worldview. Again, that's frc.org/worldview.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man wherever books are sold. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website, TonyPerkins.com. In the week following election night, as we've watched dramatic swings in votes in some battleground states, I mean, going from one column to the next, are there statistical anomalies that raise legitimate questions about the validity of these election outcomes? Joining me now, former professor and the author of Uncertainty, The Soul of Modeling Probability and Statistics, Dr. Matt Briggs. Dr. Briggs, welcome to the program. Dr. Briggs, you there? We lost him there. We're going to get him back here in just a moment. Because I want to find out from him, when you look at these analytics, you're basically taking mathematics, statistics, and look at the probabilities. And it's amazing what math will tell you. But as we now move into the realm of legal challenges, can this be of value when we look at the numbers, we look at the analytics, we break down the numbers, the probabilities? Is this something that the courts would be interested in? Can you make a case off of this? And so we're going to find out. We're having trouble getting him back connected, but we'll get it. And because I think this is really fascinating. We're now getting confirmed cases of voter irregularities. In Nevada, there's some pretty good evidence and some affidavits of witnesses that have signed affidavits regarding potentially illegal activity. And again, all of this stuff is alleged right now. We're not saying anything has happened, but where there's smoke, there's fire. Michigan, there's also several suits pending with some substantial evidence from witnesses. Philadelphia, same thing. Witnesses that saying there's voter fraud in those states. I think we've got Dr. Briggs now. Dr. Briggs, you with us?
I am.
Good. All right. So here's the case. But before we jump into some examples of this issue now is going to the courts. We've got lawsuits. How can this statistical information be helpful in a court case?
Well, it could help identify possible instances of fraud. It could certainly pick up anomalies, curiosities in the data that require explanation. The explanation doesn't necessarily have to be fraud, but when we find these kind of things, some kind of explanation is needed. For instance, when we find votes being removed for Trump, like we found in Pennsylvania, that needs to be explained. It may be a perfectly innocent explanation, and on the other hand, it may not be. So these sort of things we could find with statistics, and we need to go in and look for the explanation for why they happened.
So let's take a couple of examples. Let's take Michigan. Have you seen anything in the numbers in Michigan that would suggest that there are some anomalies there?
I have. From the Secretary of State's reporting from 2016 and 2020, this is something I pointed out the other day. This is a very important way to discover fraud. What you want to do is look at the ballots, the distribution of markings on ballots compared to those that you receive on election day and those that you receive in mail-in, or just those that are strange in some way. So, for instance, if you receive a lot of ballots that from in the mail-in data or just an even regular election day that are only for president, for instance, and not for any of the down ballot kind of thing, and there and those type of and those ballots are all leaning sort of Biden's way, that kind of thing, that's very, very curious. Because with mail-in ballots, people have all the time in the world to think about their choices, what they're going to make. Why would they only fill in president, for, you know, for the most part, and ignore all of the other questions? So what another guy, it wasn't me, but he sent the data to me from the Secretary of State's site. There is a very strange discrepancy in the 2016 data. About 98% of the people filled out the most important question, as well as president, voted for the most important things on the ballots. But in 2020, there is a huge number of people, only 84% filled out both. So that's a difference, you know, of about 14%, which is huge. It's just huge. What changes in the behavior that people all of a sudden wanted to vote only for president? Why are these ballots like this? So that's an anomaly that has to be explained. These ballots themselves, the actual physical ballots, should be looked at, because that's an oddity that's not easily explainable just in terms of simple changes in behavior.
So if that were presented, I mean, is that just something that you take to like the Secretary of State, say, hey, we want some answers on this? Or is this enough that could be presented in a legal challenge to say, hey, this discrepancy here suggests, not saying it's there was illegal behavior, but it certainly suggests there's something here that needs to be answered?
Absolutely, you could bring it up in a legal challenge. You could say, look, here's an anomaly. It's very unlikely. It has to be explained. It doesn't match, and it also, this stuff has been formally researched before. It's not unusual, these types of questions. And this conforms to other instances of known fraud, this type of ballot marking where only the president is picked. So that's it's also suspicious because of that. So there's good precedence for it, too. So that's another reason why it could be used in a legal challenge.
So, Dr. Briggs, other examples of what you've seen in the last week that would suggest that there are other places that there were these irregularities?
Yeah, in Pennsylvania, that's the most interesting one to me so far. Well, there's lots of them that are interesting, but so we looked at the data after election night. So the counting that happened after the election stopped, it began the next day. At one point in time in the evening of the next day, three separate counties removed votes for Trump. That has to be explained.
All right, Dr. Briggs, we're going to get you back on to talk more about this, because I think this is fascinating stuff. Because as the data comes in, of course, the big challenge is that the window of challenging these elections is so short. And I think that's by design. You got to really put this together quickly. So we're going to get back with you and get you back on the program maybe this week or next to look at more of this data. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Dr. Matt Briggs, you know, I'm not big on numbers. I'm not a mathematician, but I know enough about statistics to know that this stuff does tell you a picture. All right, don't go away, because we got a picture of what a Biden administration would look like.
Since the 1973 Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision, Congress and many states have taken various actions to stop taxpayer dollars from funding abortions or the abortion industry. As early as 1976, Congressman Henry Hyde led the effort to ban federal funding for abortions. The Federal Hyde Amendment, named after him, established the principle that abortion is not health care, and therefore taxpayers should not be forced to fund abortions. Despite these efforts, the abortion industry still receives millions of dollars each year in taxpayer money. In 2019, Planned Parenthood, America's largest abortion provider, received $616.8 million in government funds. Family Research Council's newly updated pro-life map tracks how your state has taken action to stop taxpayer funding of abortions. Go to frc.org/pro-life maps to see where your state stands in the fight for life. That's frc.org/pro-life maps.
Aw, man.
What's wrong?
I just missed Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, and our congressman was going to be on the show today.
Oh, that's not a big deal.
What do you mean?
Well, you can always catch the replay of the day's show.
How's that?
With the Stand Firm app.
Yeah?
Yep, you can catch that day's program and so much more. You can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes while conveniently going about your day. You can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on the main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news.
Wow, I definitely use that. How do you find the app?
Just visit frc.org/app and download, or search Stand Firm in the App Store.
Okay, that's Stand Firm.
Yep, Stand Firm.
How do you know all this?
Because I'm a SageCon, but that's another story.
Huh?
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Still to come, Secretary Mike Pompeo will be joining us later here on Washington Watch. But first, if there is a Biden administration, what would be at the top of their to-do list? You know, they've obviously been loathing every policy initiative undertaken by the Trump administration. So what will they do first? Joining me now to talk about this, Senior Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council, Travis Weber. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony.
All right. So based on the reports that are out there, what is at the top of the list for a Harris-Biden administration?
Yeah, so I think overall the picture doesn't look good. When you look at issues on which FRC focuses, protection of all human life and human dignity, family and marriage and religious freedom, there are a number of things that Biden would do if he takes office to use the executive branch and the power within the executive branch to try to reverse gains that have been made in these areas under President Trump, reverse progress in these areas, and roll us back into a situation in which the executive branch power is being used to harm Americans, their families, and their communities. There are a number of instances in all these areas. In life, for instance, Biden has pledged, and this is from his own website, he's pledged under the guise of promoting women, pledged to restore full funding for Planned Parenthood, reverse the Trump administration's rule on Title 10, which cut off funding for the Planned Parenthood, rescind the Mexico City policy, which President Trump did a great job expanding and making very robust, and
which gut, is the religious which freedom. Is just the protection from forcing taxpayers to fund abortion is what the Mexico City policy does.
That's right, Tony. So we talk about our dollars being used to fund abortions overseas and abortion promoting organizations overseas. This rule that President Trump implemented prevented that. And it goes back to Presidents Bush and Reagan. President Trump had been the strongest on this issue, however, on this specific rule and policy. Biden has pledged to gut it. He's pledged to fund abortion. And then also gutting the protections under the Affordable Care Act for religious entities like Hobby Lobby and others. This is just on the life and human dignity issue. There are a host of others on sexuality and family. The picture doesn't look good, though, for what we're looking at if he uses the executive branch power to attack these issues.
And I think we need to underscore for our listeners that a lot of what President Trump accomplished, especially in these last 2 years, has been through executive order, because they've not been able to get it through Nancy Pelosi's house. So a lot of the gains that have been made can be undone by executive order. In fact, I'd venture to say, based upon his comments and what he has said, that he will go further to the left in what many of these policies were under Barack Obama.
Tony, I think that's right. And, you know, on his website, he's framing this, framing what he would do as Obama-Biden rules, Obama-Biden guidance. So he's couching it in the mantle of piggybacking off of President Obama. To your point about executive power, other things he's pledged to do are to reverse or repeal the transgender military policy that President Trump implemented, and to rescind the rule that President Trump had issued regarding girls and boys maintaining separate facilities and sporting activities. So reinstate the Obama-Biden guidance as he postures it that would promote transgender protection, so to speak, or transgender special rights in the context of boys and girls sports. So, you know, he's couching this in the mantle of what President Obama did and pledging to use executive branch power to accomplish it.
And here's a big problem I see with this, Travis, is that there's only been one Donald Trump in terms of a president that was willing to go in and undo the bad stuff from the previous liberal administration. Most Republicans will just kind of push the pause button, but never have the courage to undo these policies as President Trump has done.
Tony, I think that's right. And we know that President Trump's faced a ton of opposition within his own government. You know, as head of the executive branch, in theory, he would have the power of the executive branch behind the policies that the voters put him in office to implement. Yet for 4 years, he's battled obstacles, battled recalcitrant staffers, bureaucrats, and others within the executive
state.
Branch who have thrown up obstacles at every turn. And so he, in spite of all that, he's managed to accomplish a lot, and we can expect Biden to try to roll back a lot of the good things that President Trump's done.
And therein lies the reason of the dust-up around President Trump, is because instead of stopping when he ran into resistance, he pushed through, ruffled feathers, but got it done. And I just don't think the American people realize the stark contrast that we're going to have if Biden and Harris are successful in this election. Travis Weber, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And obviously we'll be following that more if, in fact, we do have a Biden administration. Look, as long as there are legitimate issues being raised out there, I believe that it's to the benefit of our republic that these issues are litigated and we know for certain who the winner of this presidential race is. And then we'll take it however it comes. But we want to know that it's true, it's legitimate. All right, coming up next, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo joins us to talk about the administration's policies on religious freedom. And he said today that he thinks it'll be a smooth transition to a second Trump administration. We'll talk about it.
Are you looking to grow closer in your relationship with Jesus Christ and in your knowledge of God's Word? Family Research Council has a three-part series titled, Three Ways to Read the Bible. This series shares helpful ways to be encouraged and directed by God's truth by observing the text of the Bible and applying it to your life. There is no better time than now to get to know God through His Word by looking into the Bible to see what it says about itself, God, and humanity. There's no better time than now to begin devoting time to the Lord and to seek out His meaning for you. This blog series is a great primer on opening your eyes and heart to Him through the Bible amid the toils and troubles of today. Check out this helpful resource and learn how to read the Bible with not just your eyes, but with your heart and mind as well. To learn more, visit frcblog.com/ways to read. That's frcblog.com ways2read.
When President Donald Trump announced his nomination of Judge Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court, critics were quick to point not to this qualified nominee's record, but rather to her religious affiliations as a reason she ought not be allowed to serve as a Supreme Court justice. In an increasingly secular culture, it is not only the media that views faith as problematic for those appointed to judicial positions. Senators, particularly Democrats, have inappropriately interrogated nominees with comments and lines of questioning spanning theology, congregation membership, and associations with faith-based nonprofits, all seemingly with the intent to discredit the nominees. Family Research Council recently released a publication addressing this important issue. To learn more about what the Constitution says about religious tests, visit frc.org/religious tests. That's frc.org/religious tests.
The rapidly changing moral landscape of the 21st century presents a challenge for Christians committed to biblical sexual ethics. An uprising against morality has overturned centuries of norms concerning the family, marriage, and human sexuality. Secular culture is not the only challenger of Christian sexual ethics. Increasingly, theologically liberal churches and denominations are rejecting the church's historic teaching on marriage. As a result, Christians are facing increasing pressure to compromise the Bible's teaching on human sexuality. How should Christians who are committed to God's Word respond to these challenges? What does the Bible teach about sexuality? Family Research Council has a new publication that presents the biblical principles for human sexuality. It lays out a survey of culture, scripture, and church history that will help pastors and all Christians meet modern-day challenges to biblical sexuality with truth and love. To access this publication, visit frc.org/human sexuality.
Back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. Tomorrow night, tune in 8 p.m. Eastern Time, prayvotestand.org. We'll have a nationwide prayer meeting like we had last Wednesday night. Michelle Bachman, former congresswoman, will be with me. Also, we'll be joined by Pastor Carter Conlon, Times Square Church, and Pastor Gary Hamrick from Cornerstone in Leesburg, Virginia. Again, that's 8 p.m. Eastern Time, prayvotestand.org. Praying for our nation. Believe me, we need it. All right, last month, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo went on a five-nation Asian tour to continue the building of a bulwark against Communist China's aggression. Now, earlier today, Secretary Pompeo said the U.S. is not finished when it comes to getting tough on Communist China. Now, what does that mean? Well, we're going to talk with the secretary here. Do we have the secretary yet? All right. We're connecting with him. We're going to ask him what he meant by that. Also, earlier today at a press conference at the State Department, he said there would be a, when asked about a transition to a Biden administration, he said there'll be a smooth transition to a second Trump administration. Actually, we've got the secretary now. Secretary Pompeo, welcome to the program.
Tony, it's great to be with you. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing well, sir. Thanks so much for joining us. I made reference to your five-nation Asian tour last month, and then today you made the comment that the U.S. is not finished when it comes to getting tough on China. What do you mean?
So there's still a great deal of work to be done, and this work will continue in this year and next. It'll be ongoing. The challenge presented by the Chinese Communist Party, whether it's the terrible human rights abuses, whether it's the absolute failure to allow anyone to practice their own religious beliefs, whether that's in Tibet or in northern Mongolia or the Falun Gong, or the Christians or Catholics, the challenges they present in the South China Sea, and then the fact that they've destroyed tens of millions of jobs here in the United States through their intellectual property threat presents the greatest challenge, I think, to American sovereignty and American national security of our time.
Well, I watched your press conference earlier today. You know, I've been affected by Corona, so I'm now watching everything on computers. So I was watching your press conference, and you again stated when you went through the litany of accomplishments of the Trump administration that religious freedom has been at the top of the list. And when you look at China, obviously one of the greatest abusers, but they're not the only one.
No, sadly, too many of God's people are not permitted to practice their faith in too many parts of the world. There are restrictions on that. We're very blessed here in the United States. We have challenges of our own, but we sometimes take for granted our ability to be protected by our First Amendment, our capacity to worship as we so choose and not to have a state religion. And President Trump's made it a real priority around the world to recognize this as the most one of the most fundamental rights that each of us has by nature of our humanness and the fact that we were made in the image of God. And we have worked diligently on this all across the State Department, all across the world, to increase the likelihood that every human being will have that same chance to worship as they so freely choose.
And I've witnessed that. I've seen it firsthand, you know, from my capacity, both as an advocate here at the Family Research Council, but also as the chairman, past chairman of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, how this administration has leaned in like none other when it comes to religious freedom. And gains have been made. But I want to ask you about this. And you pointed this out today in your press conference, that this was the first administration to prioritize religious freedom. What happens if America pulls back from this fundamental human right?
Oh, my goodness. On a personal level, it will just be an enormous reduction in the ability of human beings to live the way God wants us to live. And that's just when nations oppress, when governments oppress in that way, the reduction in human dignity is of staggering proportions. It's also the case that there is a direct connection between religious freedom and the capacity for tolerance in nations to build out and create prosperity for their own country. And so you'll see not only a reduction in human wealth, but in humanity's conception of the way that every one of us must be permitted to exercise our own conscience.
You know, you and I both avoid controversy. That was a joke. A little tongue in cheek here. When you look at religious freedom, and there's now a growing body of research that underscores what you just said, that with religious freedom comes economic freedom and prosperity. With prosperity comes stability, which becomes a winner for the United States in terms of our national security. In fact, I would venture to say there's more evidence to show that religious freedom being advanced and protected is a much bigger issue in determining global stability than addressing climate change, which seems to be the banner of the left, which they march under. So I am concerned if there is a pulling back that we will see in an already unstable world even greater instability.
I think the science on that front is very clear. I think the capacity for human beings to exercise their own God-given freedoms enhances prosperity, enhances security. To your point about stability, it makes nations more stable. We've seen this in countries in Southeast Asia. We've seen this in countries in the Middle East, where advances in religious freedom leads to a more prosperous people and a nation that is more stable. Those are good things for America to have that around the world. That makes Americans more secure as well. And so I hope that whoever is leading this country forward will continue to keep this work that we've done here at the State Department on religious freedom at the top of their agenda.
Let me ask you this, Secretary Pompeo. When you look back over, before coming to the State Department, you were at the CIA as the director there. So I think you've had a little less than 3 years, I think, in your post here at Secretary of State. What would you point to as your greatest accomplishment at the State Department?
Oh, goodness. You know, Tony, I haven't really had a proper chance to reflect on that a great deal. Look, I've worked under a president who has permitted our State Department to do the things that we've just talked about. We've talked about working on religious freedom. We have fundamentally reoriented the world's attention to the challenges presented by the Chinese Communist Party. But we've done good things for the people of China. We've made advances for the people of Iran, trying to tear them into a position where they can get what it is they so richly deserve instead of the kleptocracy that has foisted so much harm upon that country and put Americans at risk. I could go around to different places in the world, and I think what President Trump has done, a policy of realism, right? Moving the embassy to Jerusalem, acknowledging that the Golan Heights was a proper part of Israel. These are things that made sense. They were common sense. But no president before him has chosen to do those things. And I think each of those has made the American people more safe and gives us a better opportunity for prosperity here at home as well.
I also think it has changed America's reputation of being strong, bold, courageous, and whether you like it or not, America has followed through on the promises that President Trump made.
It truly has. Look, when President Trump came into office, America's reputation around the world was for one of appeasement. If the members of NATO didn't want to spend the money to defend themselves, well, so be it. If there was a problem, America would be prepared to go engage around the world by putting its military there. President Trump said, no, there's a better solution. We'll build out real like-minded alliances. We will urge other nations to do their fair share. We will demand reciprocity in our trade relationships and in our security relationships. And each of these countries, many of these countries have embraced that, and they welcome that. They want American leadership. They want us to be there alongside them. And they recognize that partnering with the United States of America, whether that's Japan or India or South Korea or the Philippines, all of these countries that have worked with us on these core problem sets, I think would say today that they are far more appreciative of the model that President Trump has chosen vice the one that was here in place in America before his time.
I know the leaders that I have met with, that has been the sentiment. Secretary Pompeo, you are the nation's top diplomat. You work for the president carrying out American priorities overseas, but you interact with the world's leaders. How are the world leaders reacting to our own election drama that's playing out before us?
You know, I have talked to a handful of them about it. The topic comes up. I think they're encouraged by the fact that we've had an election. We're now going to go through a process where we ensure that the rule of law was followed, that our Constitution was followed, that those who were lawfully voting had the chance to have their ballot counted, and those who were voting in a way that was inconsistent with law won't have their ballot counted. I think they see that. They see our thoroughness, our transparency, the rule of law. They're perfectly fine with this extending on for a few more days or a little more time so that we can get to the right answer. You know, Tony, we work on elections all around the world. This is what we demand of other countries,
right,
too, that they follow their rules, their processes, and to get to a conclusion that their people can accept as valid. And it's what we're doing, and it's what I think leaders around the world have an enormous amount of respect for, that the United States does this every time and always.
I think that is an extremely important point. I don't know that the average American understands the role we play in ensuring free and fair elections abroad, encouraging the transparency, one person, one vote. And then if we're not living up to that same standard here, it undermines our credibility abroad.
Amen, Tony. That's certainly true.
Let me go back to the press conference today. You were asked a question about whether or not there would be a smooth transition to a Biden administration. And I saw a smile on your face. You said that there would be a smooth transition to a second Trump administration.
I was asked the question about, you know, was there going to be time for an adequate transition? And having come in as CIA director in a previous transition from one administration to another, your listeners should be highly confident that there will be a full, capable transition. Our adversaries should know that we're ready. We're continuing to work. We'll work all the way through January. And then on January 20th, we'll have a transition, whether it's to a Trump administration, a second Trump administration, as I spoke about today, or to an administration led by former Vice President Biden. The American people understand that our transition will be complete and thorough, and that if we spend a few more days validating that we have this process right, ensuring that we've protected every American's lawful right to vote, that's the right thing to do, and we need not worry that there won't be an adequate time for transition, which was frankly what the question was suggesting.
I mean, I think it is important to every American, to both political parties, that we have confidence in our system and that every election is a fair, transparent election, and we know with certainty who the winners are. Because without that, we cannot have confidence that in our system, which upholds our republic.
Tony, it's absolutely true, and it's important, too. As Secretary of State, it's important that the world can see that we did it in that way, that we conducted this way. They're counting on America to be stable, secure, prosperous, to do the right thing, to follow our rules. They're counting on us to do this. We don't demonstrate our capacity to do that, then we will have not only done something egregious here at home, but we will not have set a good example for the world.
Well, Secretary Pompeo, I know you're going to be back on the program again in the future, but I do want to take this opportunity to thank you for your leadership, both at the CIA and at the State Department. It's been remarkable to see what has happened at the State Department, which I've joked before is really ground zero when you talk about the swamp in D.C. It is foggy bottom. And you've led those people, I think, needed strong leadership. You provided it working alongside President Trump. And it's been remarkable to see what has happened internationally on so many fronts, the sanctity of human life, religious freedom. And I just commend you for not in any form or fashion backing up from the values that you hold and that I believe are central to America's greatness.
Well, Tony, that's very kind. You know me. I'm always up for working hard to make sure we deliver on behalf of President Trump and what the American people asked us to do when he was elected. I appreciate your kindness.
And as always, first and foremost, always a tank driver, right?
Amen. Long time ago. Tony, thank you, my friend.
All right, Secretary Pompeo, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, sir. So long.
That was a reference to his time in the Army. He was a graduate of West Point and was a tank commander. And interestingly enough, my role was in the Marine Corps was anti-tank. So I never would want to be in one of those metal boxes. But anyway, he's a great American, and we're fortunate. And this is one of the keys that I've repeatedly said. You know, it wasn't just about President Trump. And I completely appreciate his courage and his boldness, and I know there's some rough edges there. But he surrounded himself with people like Mike Pompeo, who are patriots, like the president, deeply committed to this country, and hold values that each and every one of you and I share in common and hold sacred and are at the heart of America's greatness. We need to be praying. As this process unfolds, again, there are enough anomalies to suggest that deeper investigation is needed in some of these states. We talked about it earlier, Pennsylvania, Michigan, information coming out of Nevada. We'll see. And if at the end of the day, the evidence is clear and Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are elected, then we'll go from there and we'll take it from there. But if not, we need to make sure that the truth prevails. Folks, thanks so much for joining us today here on Washington Watch. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.